I wrote myself a couple of notes. This is my 61st Easter. I don't know what difference that makes, but when you start thinking about preaching on Easter, it's like this story, the people that come to church, you know, twice a year, and they hear the same story, you know, Christmas and New Year's, or Christmas and Easter, they hear the same story. And trying to be profound is kind of silly to try to be, because it's a profound story. The resurrection changed everything. It changed everything. And what I want to do is kind of look at that day, or that morning. And when I think about it, you know, I used to go to them, sunrise services. Diane never went to them. No, I think we did. If she went, did we ever go?
Yes.
We did.
He made me.
Yeah, I made him. But I got to tell you, the first Resurrection Sunday was not that way. People weren't celebrating. You know, when we say the tradition of he is risen, and then the congregation says he is risen, that came later. That first day, that first Resurrection Sunday was not that way. But still, the resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything. The resurrection redefines the cross. It redefines that. The cross to the Romans was death and execution. The resurrection changes that. It redefines the cross. The resurrection establishes a new family. We're going to look at that in some of the things that Jesus said that first day. It started a new family of God. The resurrection guarantees the promises of Jesus. I was listening to a debate between Hitchens and one of the kind of out there atheists, and John Lennox, who has this cool Irish accent. He looks like Santa Claus, except with no beard. I mean, he really has this cool... In the end of the debate, he camped out on the resurrection and said, the resurrection, people asked him, why God? Why this God? He says, because of the evidence of the resurrection, because it changes everything. The resurrection guarantees the promises of Jesus. The resurrection changes death forever. That day, that time changed death. Death forever. The resurrection means Caesar failed. The resurrection means Pilate failed. The chief priests failed. To them, the cross failed. The resurrection means we have a new purpose. And this is kind of it's a guy illustration and kind of rather mundane But if you watch any of the basketball, I think back to, since I'm a Bears fan, I think back to the day that Jim McMahon was put into a game right before the first half. The Bears were getting annihilated, and Jim McMahon came in and threw like four passes, one long one for a touchdown, and it was what do they call it? It's a game changer. It's pretty mundane because the resurrection changes everything. And what I'd like to, I just want us to kind of look at and read the events in the four Gospels. We're not going to read a lot of verses, but I'd like to look at the reaction of the men and the women that first saw him and how they were different and how they were unusual. The reaction of the women and the men were pretty different and pretty unusual. I mean, they didn't get up saying, "He is risen. He is risen indeed." And when you read these, in the end, I want to kind of focus on John chapter 20 and Mary Magdalene. But turn to Matthew 20. Who has Matthew 28? I think Amy. She's going to read verses 5 through 10 in Matthew 28.
The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know
And I know you think of that morning, okay? You got to, I mean, we look back, we have 2,000 years of history. But that morning, the women go to the tomb to think about spicing up the body, because they had to do it fast, okay? So they go to the tomb, and the thing I want to point out is, look at verse 8. Jesus said to them, go quickly and tell, verse 7, and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and behold, he is going before you into Galilee. These are angels saying this. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you. And then listen, look at their reaction. I mean, they departed quickly from the tomb with what? With fear and what? Fear and great joy, and ran and reported it to his disciples. Isn't that odd? Fear and great joy. Those generally aren't in the same sentence, you know. And was it because of the angel? Whenever you read about angels, and we've talked about that, whenever angels came, like when angels came to Mary, his mother, they were afraid. When they came to the shepherds, they were afraid. I don't know if they were just afraid of the angels. Were they afraid to spread this story? The only thing I can relate this to of being fearful and joyful at the same time is when you have your first kid, for a guy. It's like, wow. Uh-oh. Right? I mean, for guys, it's like, I don't know. It's different. I think that something happens to ladies. It's definitely a different experience. But that's all I can think of is having fear and joy at the same time. Were they fearful about what's next? And this is I read a quote from John Ortberg, and this is what he says. Because think about, well, now he's risen. This is joyful because he's alive. They hadn't seen him yet. He's alive. And this is what John Ortberg says. When Jesus finally met Mary, we'll read that in a little bit. He did not say, now all your troubles are over. He did not say, let's all go to heaven now and have a big party. He did not say, feel relieved. He did not say, thank God the hard part is over. What he did say is, the cross didn't stick. Their plan to stop my movement didn't work. It is going to go on. Matter of fact, my plan to love even your enemies, be willing to sacrifice, to suffer, to even die for the sake of love, has been vindicated by my Father. He's alive. Yikes. Because since he was alive, and they realize now, 36 hours before this, Jerusalem was screaming to crucify him. The 11 disciples were not out at a sunrise service. They were in a room, 12 people, less than what we have here, 12 people hiding in a room. Afraid. I mean, if you were there, you think, well, he's alive, that's great. Now what? What does the future hold? They're coming after us. So that kind of odd fear and joy in the same sentence. And then turn to Mark chapter 16. This is Mark's kind of rendition of the same at the same time. Who had Mark? Go ahead.
Don't be alarmed, he said. You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. Go tell the disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
You know, you get the image that they're seeing an angel, and they said, and he said to them, do not be amazed. You are looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who has been crucified. He is risen. He's not here. In other places, it says, he told you this was going to happen. You know, you think, you know, I wish I had the great faith of Peter or John. Or, dude, these people were scared. They lived with him for 3 years and didn't get it. You know, something, you sit there and go, why do sometimes I feel like I just don't? I've had 61 Easters, and I'm still learning. And then, but the interesting thing was, they said, go tell his disciples. And then Mark adds, and Peter. And we're going to get into what Jesus calls these guys at the end, but how would you, Sunday morning sunrise service, and Peter's in this room with these 12 guys thinking, what a failure, what a deserter. I can never be forgiven for denying him ever. The angel said, go tell his disciples. And Peter. There's a lot in these little things, and we're going to get into it about Mary. The angel says names, calls people by name. What's that song, one of my favorite songs about resurrection, when he calls your name? I don't know. I Will Rise. That's it. Thanks. When he calls my name. Too bad there wasn't a Bob in the Bible. You know, there was no Roberts or anything. Anyway. But go tell Peter. And he's going before you into Galilee, and you will see him just as he said, just as he said to you. And we told you this would happen. Why are you hiding? And then they went out and fled from the tomb. This isn't like, I'm not sure this is like happiness yet. They fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had gripped them. Well, yeah. Well, what? People don't rise from the dead. When you're at a tomb, when you're at a grave, they don't come out. It gripped them. Look at the end of it. And in some manuscripts, this is actually the very end of the book of Mark. I don't want to get into the whole, you know, why some endings are different. But for some manuscripts, this was the end. And this is how Mark ends it. And they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. You know, and you think about, well, if I saw the tomb and I saw Jesus, man, I would be like, I'm telling everybody. You ever afraid to tell people about your faith? If you're not, go on this side of the room. No. Do you ever, ever feel like I can't open my mouth because I'm afraid? And I'm not recommending that. I'm just saying, if you're a person, if you're a human, and you're a believer, you understand he was resurrected. You've trusted what God has said. They lived with him for 3 years, and he still had a little bit of a problem. And an angel told them this, and they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. I mean, that's an amazing, wow, is that it? Wow. Forget that noise. If you picture that morning and those people, this was not this out over the top, let's get this message out. This was a scary, trembling, fearful, what do we do now? They're coming after us. They killed Jesus. If they can kill him, I'll wait. Wow. They're going to come after us. All right, and then turn to Luke chapter 24, verses 10 and 11. I mean, how many times have you read this? I mean, I've read this a lot. These three women, they were Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James. Also other women with them were telling these things to the apostles. So you've heard the story about if you're going to develop a story in the Middle East and you want really sound witnesses and people to believe you, don't use women, because nobody trusted. They couldn't, this sounds so odd. They couldn't even testify in a court of law. Nobody would trust them. This was like the worst people to try to tell the story, because the world wouldn't trust them. I mean, in our mindset, it's like, oh my God. I wanted a commercial. Have you seen the movie Lincoln? Not Lincoln. No, it was in Downton Abbey, where the dad says to his one daughter, "Well, you almost have the vote." To his, and I'm like, in our Western mindset, we're like, "Oh my goodness, women couldn't vote." In these days, they couldn't even. You didn't believe them. So, and Mary Magdalene. What do you know about Mary Magdalene? What do you think? What have you been told about Mary Magdalene? What was she like? A what? A prostitute. That's what we think, right? Look her name up, because I thought so too. A pope declared that she was a prostitute. Doesn't say she was a prostitute. There's several Marys. And Mary Magdalene is only mentioned twice. And Magdalene was a town, or Magdala or something like, was a town on the Sea of Galilee. So it's Mary from Chicago or whatever. It's just where she was from. And it says she was possessed by seven demons and was released from seven demons. So, now, put yourself in the disciples' shoes. Here's this, not a prostitute, but fairly unstable lady. she had seven demons. She was doing weird stuff. Do we really? Not only is she a woman that we shouldn't trust her, she was nuts. Excuse me. Bottom line was she was crazy. So these women, and even Mary, the mother of James, and other women, they were all standing there. And verse 11 says, "And these words appeared to them as nonsense, and would not believe them." They're in this room, the 12 guys and a bunch of women, all excited. The angel said, "We got to go to Galilee, where Mary was from." Oh, Mary, it might be a demon again. And John Ortberg said, once the disciples started to see him and started to believe, wouldn't you have liked to have been in the room with the women and the men the next meeting? And say, "Told you, told you. I'm not crazy. This is Mary. It's not a crutch. I'm not believing this just because I saw him." To me, this is an amazing. And then at the end, where, the 12 guys are in the room, 11, sorry, 11 guys are in the room. Peter's in the back, feeling pretty bad. And all the guys are like, "Mary, Mary, Mary, Joanne, come on. This is nonsense." And Peter sneaks out the back door. Because it says, "But Peter arose ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen wrappings only. He jumped out of the tomb and go, "This is great." He went away to his own home, marveling at what had just happened. I don't think he really got it yet. But he ran out the back, you know. But Peter, I got to find out. Because this would be really something. All right, and now turn over to John. And I'm going to read 18 verses. It shouldn't take too long. John chapter 20. Oh, put it in the wrong place. Chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. And again, you know, we've got 2,000 years of history of this. This is the first day. Their Messiah is dead. They went through this awful, awful transition from the triumphal entry to, what did you call it, Steve? Busy Tuesday, where he cleansed the temple and Passover with his disciples and washing their feet, and now he's dead. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? So in the morning, the sun's up, let's have a sunrise service. Mary goes, "Let's go, we got to fix the body." It was a mess. And Gary Enrich said, you know, technically, the Romans would have just left it there. They normally left the bodies on the cross to be eaten by birds. And they thought, we got to get his body down. But they had to do it fast because it was before, they had to get it in the tomb before sunset. Saturday, sitting at home, worrying, what next? What are we going to do? It says, now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark, and she saw the stone was already taken away from the tomb. And so she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." And Peter therefore went forth. If you went through a whole sequence of this, I mean, these are told by four different guys, and it's the same information, but from four different views, okay? And I'm not smart enough to, like, we should probably have an order of how all these things happen, but she's gone to Peter now. She's been by the tomb. The tomb is empty. She runs and tells Peter. Peter therefore went forth, and the other disciple, which is John, who's writing the book, and they were going to the tomb, and the two were running together, and the other disciple ran ahead faster than Peter, and he came to the tomb first. And stooping, looking in, he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Simon Peter, therefore, also came following him and entered the tomb, and he beheld the linen wrappings lying there, and the face cloth which had been on his head, not lying with linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Something had happened. You know, somebody took care of this wrapping and folded it up. And this is, you know, we're so used to this. It's like this had to be like a head scratcher. What? Who would take it? And people still argue over this. Well, the Romans took it. Well, the high priest took it. Well, and I know you've heard all those arguments. Why would if the high priest took his body, why wouldn't they have, like, ha-ha, we tricked you. He's not risen. Here's his body. So the other disciple who had come in first to the tomb entered then also, and he saw and believed. The whole book of John, what is the purpose of the book of John? These things I have written unto you, that you might what? Believe. He didn't sugarcoat it. He didn't like say even, and John, the great apostle, believed immediately. He looked in and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. So the disciples went away again to their own homes. We've still got to hide. This ain't good. Because really, when this gets out, they're coming after us. I don't know if they had that conversation, Peter and John, we got to think this through. Because they killed Jesus. We're next. Peter, just go home. Think about this a little. I'll go to my house. You lock the door. They didn't know. They weren't going. He is risen. But Mary was standing outside the tomb. I mean, this scene is just like, did they run by Mary going, she's crying again. She's the one that did the oil thing. She wasted all that. Remember the stupid Mary. She was standing outside the tomb weeping. And so as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb. And she beheld two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "Because you have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they laid him. I just want to fix the body. We got to fix this." And when she had said this, she turned around and beheld Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Now, again, when you think about this, the last time she saw him, I was doing my channel surfing, and the Passion of Jesus, remember that was out a few years ago, and I just hit at where they were beating him, and I had to turn it off. I mean, it was, when she last saw him, Isaiah said he was so marred, people wouldn't recognize him as a human being. So it would be not unusual that she sees him and doesn't recognize him. He's dead. People don't rise from the dead. And Jesus said to her, same question. "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away. Please let me know where he is. I want to fix this." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." When I was listening to Gary Enrich on this, and he said, that might be one of the most profound words in Scripture. Think of Jesus turning to you and saying, "Alan, or Betsy, or Diane, Amy, Bob." Mary, and she turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Teacher." And Jesus said to her, and she, this scene is like a scene when a soldier surprises his kids from Iraq. And you've seen those. Like, I just saw one where the kid was sitting at Christmas on Santa Claus's lap, and he said, "What do you want for Christmas?" "And I want my dad home." And his dad comes around from the side. And the kid, what does the kid do? "Oh, besides, I want a bike." The kid does what Mary did. Grabs onto him. I mean, I'm not sure they even got it yet, you know, but she grabs onto him and says, "Teacher," and Jesus said to her, "Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father." And I have a theory about what all this means. I mean, but he had to leave, you know. But go. You know, I would love to just sit here hugging on you, but you got to go tell the disciples, I got a job for you. I have something for you to do. Everything has changed, Mary. Everything has changed now. You have a thing to do. You have a purpose to your life. And right now, it's go. And listen to what he calls these guys. Go, tell my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father. I ascend to my God and your God. You know, he didn't say to them, go tell those bunch of failures, deserters, cowards, that I'm risen. Go, this is the first time he's called them this. Go tell my brothers that I'm going to my Father and your Father, and I'm going to my God and your God. Everything has changed. Everything has changed. Mary Magdalene came announcing to the disciples, I have seen the Lord, and that she said these things to her. That he said, Peter, he called you his brother. John, he called Matthew. I used to know them all, but I don't. All at the same. My guess is she named them all. You're his brother now. Everything has changed. The resurrection has started a new family. That we are Jesus' brothers and sisters. His God is our God. His Father is my Father. I'm not sure I get it yet. Just saying it out loud. That Jesus looks at the likes of me and says, go tell my brother Bob that his sin is gone. I mean, when I think about that day and I see how really human these people are, and I think about the struggle sometimes that I'm, you know, you'd think you'd have this great faith. And life is scary sometimes and real happy sometimes. And the question is, what is our, or, and I don't, I hate when I say, what is your reaction to the resurrection? And this is a statement that I heard in a sermon. The resurrection really doesn't take on meaning until you trust it. I mean, it does, you know, the resurrection means everything to God and his Son because it changes everything. And all he asks me and you to do is trust it. And when those disciples started to believe, the resurrection changes everything. I am now crucified with Christ. All things have become new. He has separated my sin as far as the east is from the west. Let's pray together. Father, as we really think about that morning, the quietness, probably the loneliness of that Sunday morning, the fear that they felt, the joy that they felt, the mixed up emotions that they felt, and it's recorded for us that when your son came back, not pointing fingers at the disciples, but calling them brothers. Father, impress on us daily when we get discouraged or worried or whatever position we're in our life, teach us how secure we are, that we are in your son's hand and your son is in your hand, and no one will ever pluck us out of that hand, that your resurrection started a new family that day, and all to be part of that family, all you ask us to do is to believe you. Father, thanks for this day. Thanks for your love and care for us. Thanks for your grace and your goodness to us. Thanks for your forgiveness. It's in your son's name I pray.